When you hire someone into an organization, you just don't put them and say, hey, do the job. You invest time, and it's a lot of time up front. It's a lot of time throughout their tenure with you that you're really sort of saying, how are you doing? You know, where can I help? This is how it's done. Let's schedule time and you know, do this work. So many times, you know, that I've sort of taken what I've learned and given it back, right? So I take a lot of time up front when I hire someone to invest time in them.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we learn from executives and founders who are changing their companies and industries about what they see different and uniquely around identifying top talent. If this is your first episode, welcome. Thanks for joining. If you're a longtime listener, always appreciated. Please make sure to subscribe and give us a high rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Today, we have a very special guest. We are joined by Stephanie Perry. She is the head of finance and administration at Project Equity. Stephanie, how are you doing today?
Good, Oz. How are you?
I'm great. I am feeling good. It's a overcast day in South Florida. We're starting to get a little bit of colder weather out here. Where are you right now?
I'm actually located in Oklahoma City. We are a fully remote organization. So during the second year of COVID, I relocated to Oklahoma City where my family is from and been enjoying it a lot, but sometimes miss the New York area where I migrated from. So yeah.
Talk about it. Talk about a difference in culture shock. All right. Give me like a 30-second reason on why I should come visit Oklahoma City, because I've never been.
Ooh, Oklahoma. Great springs and falls. A lot of things to do outdoors. Great food. A lot of people always think it's just barbecue, but like you can get great like Thai food here. You can get, I mean, amazing Mexican food here. Like the food cuisine is just amazing. And if you like this good down hearted, wonderful, warm-hearted people, then it's a great place to be. Yeah.
Love that. And home of the Oklahoma City Thunder, which are
yes,
a dang good basketball team too. Go Thunder, right?
Thunder and OU football and OSU football. We're big football country here. So yeah, we love it all.
That's it. That's it for me. I'm a sports guy. I'm in. I'll be on the first flight out. All right. We talked about your role. You're the head of finance and administration at Project Equity. I want you to tell us a little bit about the company and the mission, and then particularly what drew you to this organization.
Yeah, so Project Equity is a 10-year-old organization. We really focus on employee ownership. So the whole focus is really about how employees become owners, equity owners of the organization or business that they are part of. And this is really great because as baby boomers get older, they've, you know, created these amazing businesses, but their children want to be doctors or lawyers or other things and aren't necessarily interested in the business, but the owners don't want to leave, or shut down their doors. They want to leave a legacy. And what better way to do that by then giving it to their employee base? We really do focus on low income and, more diverse groups. But it's an amazing way for an owner to exit their organization, their business, and leave a legacy that's, you know, ongoing, but also leave it to the workers who've been really helpful in establishing the business. So it's a great organization with a great mission. We've, I think, successfully transitioned 28 businesses throughout the 10-year history. We have not only are we nonprofit, but we also have funds so we can help the organization, the employees in particular, finance this. We help them finance this with very competitive rates. So it's just a great way where employees don't have to give up, you know, a lot of money up front. We help fund that. And then through their transition process over the years, they pay the owner back if there's anything left that isn't paid up front, as well as they help, we help fund the capital and they basically take on that debt and pay us back. So it's a great way for employees to own and create ownership and wealth for the long term for particularly, like I said, diverse groups, so minorities. So it's amazing. It's an amazing organization. And why I got interested in it was just for that reason. I'd previously been with a company prior that was held privately and was sold. And one of the things as buyers were coming in to the to approach us to purchase us, the leadership wasn't really sort of pleased with the options. And we, you know, in hindsight, we were like, we need an organization like this. If you don't have the connection to investment funding or banks or, you know, what that process is like, this nonprofit does that for you. We're basically doing the M&A work, but doing it in a way that's really accessible for people who may not necessarily have the cash up front to do that. So it's great.
Yeah, I love that. So, you know, knock on wood, hopefully I'll be doing this for a while with MSH and Aon. I've got four kids, my three daughters. One wants to be an astronaut. One wants to be a professional cheerleader. One wants to be an actress. We don't have any of those jobs here at the old MSH. So I don't know. There's a lot of time. Things can change. They 13 years old, 11 years old, 9 years old. We'll see. But I, you know, who knows? I might need project equity once I start to age out and give options and opportunities for people.
Yeah, so well, definitely I'll be in touch. Think of us.
So you spent your career in media primarily previously, right? You were with Meredith, you were at Fortune, you were with The Skim. These are some of the biggest, you know, publications or digital publications in the world. Most recently, you are dictionary.com. So I'm just interested. I can tell that you were really drawn to this, but it's so different than some of the things that you'd been doing previously. Was that something you wanted at this point in your career? Was it the point that you wanted to do something in a different industry, in a different vehicle?
Great question. Yes and no, right? So I've been supporting nonprofits for a very, very long time. One of the ones that I'm really passionate about is the Children's Law Center of New York. They are primarily funded by the state court system in New York. But I've really been involved, engaged with them in other organizations. And so when dictionary.com was sold, I was looking like, what do I want to do, right? It's a great point to step back. And I've been in media for so long, and I'm passionate about media. I love media. But media has really been taking a downturn. If you're not really the Googles or the Facebook, it's been a challenging, last 10 years for many companies to really thrive long term. And so I really wanted to focus my career more on mission-based focus. Or what I actually had the opportunity to do at Dictionary was to support, you know, minorities as CEOs or female leaders or whatever. And that's what actually The Skim and Dictionary.com allowed me to do at The Skim. Two female founders of that company, they started The Skim, you know, from nothing and really grew it. So it was a great appeal there. And then Dictionary, their chief product officer had left and went to be CEO of Dictionary.com. So I was helping a female minority, you know, be successful. And you just don't really see that a lot in corporate America. So even though those two media companies weren't necessarily non-for-profit, they really were sort of a part of my passion. So it just really afforded me at this point in time an opportunity where I was really passionate about the mission that Project Equity has, along with, allowing me to experience a different industry. And I'm still learning. I had no clue that the finances of nonprofit were so complex and so different than for-profit businesses. So I'm still learning. I've been in this position almost a little bit over 60 days now. But I'm really enjoying it. The staff are so passionate about this mission and employee ownership. So it was a really nice move for me. But I still have a very, very, very special place in my heart for media. It's really where I got my chops as far as my career and management and leadership is. And so I'll always have a special place for media in my heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, so I mean this in the best way possible, but you brought up minorities and diversity. And I look at finance in general, right?
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of women.
You don't.
And you don't see a lot of Black women.
You
don't. So my question to you would be, how did you get into finance, right? And were you constantly surrounded by people that didn't look like you, that didn't have the same experience in you? How did you take that all in? Like, well, I'm interested in how you first got into it and then what it was like growing in finance in a space that, quite frankly, the demographics are not, you know, not the same as you are.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I just really had a lucky career, honestly, when my first job out of college was actually with a private ambulance company. And I'd stayed there a couple of years or whatever. And then I left. And this is right when the web, the internet had started. And, you know, everybody was like, it's kind of like Bitcoin in a way. I like something like, you know, Bitcoin was like a big thing a couple of years ago and now it's died down. And I think now that people know what to do with it, that it's coming back in its own way. The web was the same thing in the same situation. Like it was like the web, the World Wide Web, and all these businesses were starting. And I went to a startup and hated it. They like no one really knew what to do with it. And my manager at the ambulance company had since left, but got approached about a job in the media industry, and he referred me for the job, and I got it. The job was at Miller Publishing. It was with Cruising World, Sailing World, Tennis Magazine, but the owner also owned ownership in Vibe Spin Magazine, Martha Stewart Living, and other magazines, and that's where I got my chops at. And my general manager was a female, and she was amazing, really taught me the foundation of publishing industry. And back then it was just really magazines. It really hadn't got into the, you know, live event space or the web digital piece of it yet. It was just still print. And when she left, she reached out to me and said, hey, Essence is looking for a business assistant business manager, and it's in New York. I was living in LA. So luckily, I interviewed, got the job, moved from LA to New York, and then kind of the rest is history. Essence was owned 49% at that time by Time Inc., which was a large publishing company. And 6 months into it, Time Inc. decided to purchase the other 51%. So in 6 months, I went from, you know, independent privately held media company to being a part of a $4 billion in revenue media company, which was really amazing for me because, you know, we had People Magazine and Sports Illustrated and Food and Wine Magazine. You know, we had 21 brands, and then plus they had other ancillary businesses. And during that journey, I always had female leaders that really sponsored me. So it wasn't just about being, you know, a mentor. It was really people that were sponsoring me, like supporting me, you know, talking positively about me in meetings, putting me in the right meetings, putting me in the right conversations that really helped sort of bloom. And they were all sort of, you know, backgrounds. Actually, most of them were white females, but they always supported me, always promoted me, and always complimented my work and always made sure that, you know, whenever I was in the room or when I wasn't in the room, they were always promoting me. So it just sort of stuck. I stayed at Essence for 12 years, got to work on People in Espanol, a magazine, and helped them launch their festival event. And then from there, I made connections at Fortune. Fortune has an amazing conference business, so made connections there. And when Fortune was sold, they asked me to sort of help them out. And it just sort of blossom. And next thing I know, you know, I'm over 20 years in the media industry. But
I love that. And I think you made a really good point. It's those sponsors, which is different than a mentor, mm-hmm. the ones that are championing you behind closed doors.
Yeah.
We all know that the behind those closed doors are where decisions are made, and their credibility a lot of time becomes your credibility. And I tell people this in my company all the time, like, you know, there's a few different ways to get promoted here. But one of the ones I tell you is, if we're getting feedback from the people around you, right, that your superiors, but also our customers, our candidates, and other people that are interacting with you, I might have my own data points, but I always think of it as like, it can be very skewed. I'm 30,000 feet in the air. I'm, you know, I might be seeing only bad or good or extremes on one end or the other. I really collect as much of that information. And when I have somebody on my inner circle that's trusted saying stumping for somebody or going for them, that holds a ton of weight for me. And so having that sponsor in your career can be make or break. Let's do this. Let's shout them out. Who are a couple people, maybe some stories you have?
Wow, there's so many.
Okay, listen, I want to be clear. Stephanie is not limiting it to just these couple people she's about to name.
No.
She cares and loves all of you, but we're going to talk about one or two.
Yeah, so I think the first one I have to give a shout out is to Karen Brown and Michelle Ebanks. Karen Brown was the business director at Essence, and Michelle Ebanks eventually became president of Essence. And they always supported me. But then when we moved to Time Inc., they centralized sort of the finance function, and I reported into Maria Beckett. Maria Beckett is amazing. She's one of the SVPs at Hearst Media now. Regina Buckley, who is CFO of Hearst Media print magazine division, she supported me along the way. And then I can't forget Donna Clark. Donna Clark, at 5 years, when I was in publishing, I moved over to corporate real estate, and Donna Clark was the SVP and handled all corporate real estate. And she was always a big promoter of me as well. But there are so many more. Greg Giagrande, he was the executive vice president of HR and communications at Time Inc. He was a great champion of me. Just so many people that were just amazing. And definitely, I know I'm not missing a few, but those are the ones that stick out. And Joy Profit, she was also our general manager at Essence and eventually COO at Essence, and always promoting me whenever I needed, you know, a reference or, you know, support or, you know, guidance. They've always been there to support me. So I've just been very, very fortunate to have you know, a very diverse group, but again, most of them have been female leaders. And that's one of the things I've loved about publishing, is that publishing was always so open and supportive of female leadership throughout all levels of the organization. So it just the industry was very kind to me, and I was very lucky.
Yeah, I counted six names there. I love hearing that. I love hearing people that have helped you in your career being shouted out on our little podcast here. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you what all the listeners are thinking right now too. There is zero chance that you're able to list six, seven people off the top of your head that have been career defining sponsors of you and helping in your career without you being damn good at what you do. So that means that you're obviously doing something right, where people, listen, there's political capital being used in these meetings, and their credibility is on the line. So when somebody's going out and doing that, that means that you've done something to be exceptional to them and to stand out to them and feel like you're worth sponsoring. So as much as I want to shout out all those people, I want to shout you out, Stephanie, because they needed the raw clay, or they needed the person that was willing to take the feedback and learn and excel and go above and beyond. And it sounds like you've done that throughout your career. So I love that. Let's talk about now the reverse now, because you've developed leaders in your career as well. We talked a lot about talent development being very important as a leader. I'm interested. You've been in some really cool companies. What are the programs you've seen companies implement that show they take this seriously? And what do you think that putting these programs does to attract top talent into your organization?
I think that the programs are really, it's not really programs per se. I just think that there's been individuals who've invested time, right? Like when you hire someone into an organization, you just don't put them and say, hey, do the job. You invest time, and it's a lot of time up front. It's a lot of time throughout their tenure with you that you're really sort of saying, how are you doing? You know, where can I help? This is how it's done. Let's schedule time and you know, do this work. So many times, you know, that I've sort of taken what I've learned and given it back. Right. So I take a lot of time up front when I hire someone to invest time in them. And I don't know if it's necessarily a program, but more so I'm just doing what I was taught and what I was given and what's helped me. And because of it, I maintain amazing relationships with people that are reported into me. I mean, years later, you know, after the fact, someone will email me like, I was just thinking of you. How are you doing? Right. I believe that you need to give real and honest feedback. I don't believe you do that during just annual reviews or twice a year. Like, I give real-time feedback. I try to do that during our weekly update meetings, but there's been times when I needed to give people feedback like more, you know, that, you know, it's Tuesday and our next, you know, catch-up is until Monday, and I'll be like, we need to have a chat. But I try to give feedback in a way that it doesn't diminish people, right? So I had a situation where someone just wasn't performing, and I, you know, sort of said, hey, you're not performing. This isn't sort of what I saw from you in the interview. It's not what your resume says. And I said, but more importantly, I'm here to support you, right? So you tell me, what am I doing, not doing right, so that you aren't excelling at your job the way that I know you have the capabilities of. That's a very different conversation than a conversation of, you're not doing this, I need you to do this, and this is the new deadline, right? I'm really coming in with a proactive dialogue that allows them to know that, you know, if I need to take more time out of my day, that I'm going to invest that time in you. So if I'm investing that time, then you need to make sure that you let me know what you need. Maybe I'm not speaking clearly. Is it, do I need to have more meetings, less meetings? Do I need to put things on an agenda for you? Like, I'm always coming in like that I'm the problem, so that how do I fix me then to help you, which made it more approachable, I think, and more acceptable for people to realize, hey, you know, this isn't about, you know, you're doing XYZ wrong, but someone is really saying, hey, I'm doing something wrong because you're not being successful. And so what do I need to do to help make you better? Right.
Yeah. So listen, that is 100% my mentality. One of our, almost to a fault, to be honest, because sometimes it's like sometimes people have to deliver or not deliver too, or be a fit and not fit too. So like sometimes, like if anything, I've been too much like, what don't you have here that's not allowing you to reach your potential? Now I'll ask you a question, because I've done the same thing, and I go into it, hey, listen, this isn't what either of us expected. So I want to look at this from my perspective. What don't you have in place? Because a lot of my management style has been give the people what they need to ultimately be successful. And then ultimately, when things don't work out, then it becomes much easier to look in the mirror and say, hey, here are the things that I need to be doing better. But do you find that people are either A, understand what it is they're lacking from a leadership infrastructure company perspective, or maybe even not willing to share it? Because I don't know that I always get the answers I'm looking for there. Sometimes I'll get a glossed over answer. Sometimes I'll get, no, everything's great. I don't know. It's like, you know, so have you gotten good answers when you brought that to the table? Have you find that people have a strong sense of like, this is what I need from you, Stephanie?
I think that it's been a mix, right? I think for the most part, like if I'm also coming with very, very clear examples of what's not working, like you didn't do this report or you didn't do that, right? So, but I'm giving them examples of what's not working, right? I'm also saying, can I? And so sometimes I, you know, instead of leaving it open-ended, I also try to direct. So do you want more meetings? Do you want, right? I'm giving them suggestions. So that way I'm not leaving anything on the table, because sometimes, especially if you've got an entry level person, you know, they may be afraid. It's an intimidating conversation, you know, all of those things. So I try to, you know, leave it open-ended questions, but I also try to be like yes, no questions as well, to give them every option so that I just don't get the blank stare. But I really do think at the end of the day, it's about someone's maturity level and where they are in their career and their interest in what they're doing, right? And usually as a manager, you can really tell if they're really interested in that career, that job or function or not, right? So there have been times where I just don't have that conversation. I'll just say it's not working and call it. But when I really see that someone is saying, hey, yes, I want to be in the finance path, I really want to be at this company. And sometimes I'll say, yeah, I see you want to be at this company, but I don't know if you want to be in this job. And they're two different things. So you can be at this company, but you don't necessarily need to be in this job, because this job isn't working for you. So a part of it is really sort of taking on that leadership manager role and really helping guide the conversation. So I'm very focused on where I want this to go and the capabilities of someone. But it is hard, because you do, you know, you will sometimes get the blank space there. And what I try to do in those situations is just say, hey, let's just circle back in this a week. Let's marinate on it. That's my favorite word, is to marinate, marinate it, right? Because when you marinate, all the good stuff is supposed to come in, right? All the flavors.
That's the barbecue Oklahoma City coming out of you right there.
So like, let's marinate on this, and then let's come back and regroup, and then let's see. And if that person has taken a week and really thought about it, you will, and is really interested in that position and that job, they'll come back. And if they're not, then that really sort of is telling me that, hey, they don't really want this job or want to be here. And then I'm starting to look at different options for them.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
Now, when we started off the podcast, you talked a little bit about how you'd move from New York City to go to Oklahoma City, where you got a lot of family. I don't want to make any assumptions, but I've worked in New York before. Everything is about work, and the grind and like all those different things. And you talked about, and maybe it wasn't for you, but you did talk to me about work-life balance. So I'm just interested, what do you do to maintain that balance? And did you feel like your balance was off before you moved back to an area where you had family? And that was part of the reason.
There have been times in my career where, yes, it's absolutely been off. Like, you know, New York is definitely more like a hustle, get your grind on, you know, type environment. Or, you know, Oklahoma, like Sundays, people really shut down, like their businesses, but people are really like, you see less traffic. Everything is a lot more, you know, family oriented or whatever. The work-life balance for me was just always a priority, and it became a priority really when I had a kid, right? When you have children in the conversation, they make work-life balance a priority. Before then, I was like, I can work 80 hours a week and it's good, right? And I literally did, you know, it was one of the reasons why I, you know, made a shift from being on the print side to corporate real estate was I was literally working 80 hours a week. And when I left, they literally split my job into two jobs, literally. That just tells you how much I was working, that they really had to split it up into two different roles.
Jeez.
But I didn't mind it. You know, I had the flexibility. It was just me. Yeah, life was great. But as I got a relationship, had a child, all of those good things, like, you know, your kid needs to eat, you know, and your kid needs to, you know, be picked up from daycare or after school or, you know, recover the nanny or whatever it is. And so I had to create the balance. But I've been very fortunate, I would say, in the last probably three jobs that work-life balance was a company priority. So I think when it's a company priority or your at least your leader's priority, then it becomes, you know, something that you acclimate to. And now I'm so used to it that, like, I'm just setting boundaries. Like I said, I just started my new role at Project Equity. And, you know, I've been working every weekend trying to catch up, you know, get up to speed, all this other stuff. But I was burnt out. I was like, this isn't the life I want to lead. And I don't want to set that pace. So this weekend, I was like, I'm not doing it. I need to go on my bike ride in the morning. I need to, you know, go for my walks in the evening. I need to watch Sunday football. Football was amazing yesterday.
Great NFL day. I was at the Dolphins game watching my Cardinals win on a last second field goal with my daughter.
It was so good. That Bears Hail Mary was like amazing.
Oh, that was
like
unbelievable. I watched that live. I got home in time for that. Amazing.
I know, right? So those things refuel me. And when I walked in, you know, this morning getting ready for work, it was, you know, I work remote, but still you have to sit down and work at, you know, your desk and get going. I was ready for it. I was ready to get charged. So for me, exercise is really important. Like, you know, I try to exercise in the morning, walk in the evening. I honestly try to do it every day. Now that I'm starting a new job, it's probably four times a week instead of 7 days. But you have to create that space and create that boundary. And that's easier said than done 20 some years in your career. It's not that easier said than done when you're in entry level and you're trying to, you know, wage your way up. I know that. But, you know, if it's really important for you, you have to find those jobs and companies or leaders that will ask that. And I always ask, you know, on a job interview, what's your company culture? What does work-life balance look like? So that I always know going into a situation what those expectations are. And I've walked away from things like, oh, we're like 70 hours a week. And, you know, sometimes we email, that's not the job for me. If that's not where I am at this stage in my life, because I want to be a fully present parent. And so I have to prioritize what work looks like so that I have that balance.
I love that. So what about, you talked a little bit about drawing boundaries for yourself and what you do, but what about when you have people on your team that maybe need to have the conversation with them about their balance, and you can tell they're burning out, or you can tell that they're burning the candle on both ends, or maybe not making the time they need to for their family or things like that. How do you help them draw those boundaries as their leader?
So here's a couple of things that I do, which usually this happens in the first couple of months of someone starting. First of all, I always say, We're not saving lives. We're not doctors. We're not lawyers. We're not police officers. We're not firemen. We're not saving anybody's lives. So there's nothing here that requires you to like, you know, kill yourself or, you know, give up what's important for you. My biggest thing is communication. Plan your day, outline your day, ask, I will tell you, but also ask what are deadlines, deliverables, so you can plan your day out. And, you know, I'm big. I've even done this to my president. I was like, I worked here a year and a half and I've never seen you take a vacation. When you're taking a vacation, right? Like, I'm that person. Like, I asked that question at the top, above me and below me. I'm always monitoring that because you can't bring your best self when you're like burned out and you're tired. So I monitor that in that way. But then it always happens within, you know, first 3 to 6 months, someone comes to me and says, Stephanie, you know, I want to take some days off, right? And I'm like, okay. And they're like, you know, these are the days I'm thinking, is that okay? And I always say, let me ask you a question. If you have to go to the doctor for an emergency, are you calling me in the middle of the night asking me if you need to go to the, if you can use your benefit to go to the doctor? And they're like, no. And I'm like, same with vacation. You control it. What a better way to approach me is to say, Stephanie, I'm taking off January 15th through January 20th. I know that we have XYZ done. This is the action plan that I have in place to be able to do it. And then I just wanted you to know because the approval is coming, a request is coming across your desk. So in that way, you're not asking me, you're telling me how you're managing it. And that's how you should move forward, because vacation is a right. It's not something that, it's not a permission. It's a right that you have. You've earned it. And if you've earned it, manage to that. So I want them to learn that, right? Because it takes a long time for me to get that. It's like, you know, no, this is a benefit. Like, this is a benefit of working here. I get so many days off. And so I should ask for it. Now, if it becomes a problem, we will talk about, hey, you took, you know, like every day off, or, you know, once a month, that's not going to work. Right. But I really try to help people realize that vacation time, floating holidays, all of those things. And then the last thing I do is I'm a big manager of every quarter, saying, what days have you taken out? How many do you have? Let's figure out what's on the calendar to make sure that you get those days out. Because if you get 3 weeks and it's, you know, and you started and you've been here since last year, and so, and you haven't taken a week off, there's a problem. That's a problem. Right. So I'm staying on top of it as a manager leader to make sure that they know that I value that time for them, but they should really value that time for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who are like pulling up the Project Equity careers page right now, making applications. Stephanie gets it. I want to work for somebody like that. That's sensational. I appreciate that feedback. Let's talk a little bit about hiring. Let's talk about how those people come into your organization.
Yeah.
I'm interested. So, core hiring philosophy, what are you looking for in somebody that you want to bring into your team? Maybe whether it's behavioral attributes or these are the things I've learned over the course of my career. Do you have a core hiring philosophy?
We like hard workers, right? And because at the end of the day, I tend to work for organizations that, you know, we're either growing in growth mode or where you have limited resources. So I really look for, you know, people that are interested in the business, have, you know, whatever skills I'm looking for, but most importantly are hard workers and willing to do anything. You know, I can remember when I was at Fortune and had opened our New York headquarters, and we needed our executive assistants were doing something. So I was like, okay, what we'll do is we'll rotate myself, and I'm a VP of operations at the point, and two executive assistants. And I was like, I'll take a day where I'm sitting at the reception desk. And someone came up that's in leadership and was like, what are you doing? I'd never sit at the reception desk. And I'm like, it's one of the best places you can be as a leader, because you see the people coming and going, you see the clients that are coming and going, you really get a perception of the business. But I'm like, there's no job that's too small for me. I don't have an ego going in, and I'm looking for people like that, that just work hard, just trying to get, you know, whatever task is done to the best of their ability, and really move things along and be a contributor, really be an asset at any level. If I'm hiring you as a, you know, director, do I expect you to be a receptionist too? No. But what I like is people that are coming in with that mindset that, hey, I'm going to give it my all. And if you ask me to do, you know, some tasks, you know, once or twice that isn't in my job description, I'm more about, you know, being a team player than anything else. So those, the hard work of being a team player, those are the sort of the skills that I'm really looking for. And people that are hungry, right, that really want to learn and grow with their job and with the organization. And sometimes you can't really tell that because, you know, people can put on a good play. But you can usually know within the first, you know, 60, 90 days if someone's going to really, you know, step up to the plate or not. And I also want to say this because this is important. I remember when I joined corporate real estate department and someone who was there was giving me sort of the rundown of people. And one of the leaders said, and this person's a B+. They do their job, they do it well, but they're not trying to be promoted or whatever. They just want to do a B+ job. And at first I was kind of like, what type of person do you want to hire that only wants to be a B+? But I value those people, right? Like, and I'm saying that you don't always have to be the A+ person. You can be the A person, you could be the A-, you can be the B+ person because they're good, they're steady, they're stable, they know what they have to do, they get it done, but they're not trying to necessarily go too far above and beyond because they value their life. They value the work-life balance. They have a goal. They may, you know, have a side project or side business that they're doing, but they're dependable, they're reliable, and they do a good job, but they're not necessarily going to go too much far beyond, you know, the job, you know, requirements. And they kind of keep the ship going. So it's okay, you know, also to have people on your team that are like the superstars and the people that meet expectations. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're doing anything wrong, but they're doing their job, they're doing it well, and they're keeping the ship moving. So I think that that's important to remember. So it's okay. I'm looking for those people that are going to go above and beyond, but I'm also more importantly looking those people who are going to do what I need them to do and get their job done. And I don't have to micromanage them because I don't like to be.
Yeah, they're superstars and then they're stars in their job, right? If you look at it like an NBA team, like you got to have that person that knows they're out there to play hard defense. You got to have that person that knows they're out there to make an open 3-point shot. Not everybody can be LeBron James. Not everybody can be Shai Gilgeous. You know what I mean? So
right.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And quite frankly, it makes it easier to have a culture of high performance because if everybody's just trying to constantly move up and looking to the next best thing, that can be actually really detrimental to the productivity of your work. It can lead to a little bit more of a competitive and cutthroat environment. You know, you want to have the right mix. And that's something that I've learned throughout my career too, is it's not just hiring A+, 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 A+. It's about finding people who are stars in their job and that's what they care about. And then augmenting that with people that maybe go above and beyond or can take things and help really open up the aperture and potential of your team. What about a memorable interview experience? If I ask you about one, maybe one that you interviewed for, or maybe you were interviewing somebody, any come to mind?
A memorable interview experience. I guess it's probably the dictionary one because it was so easy because I knew the worked with the person.
So were they just asking like definitions like of hard words?
No,
like,
it was, you know, literally, I'm gonna tell you, it was like a 5-minute interview. You know, of course you get an email like, hey, I'm looking for a VP of finance. And I'm like, I'm a VP of finance. And so we talk and I was like, well, yeah, I've been, you know, at the Skim for a couple of years. It's really great or whatever. And the CEO was like, well, you know, if you're interested, you got it. I'm like, who gets a job like that? Like, literally that was the job interview. And I was like, what? And they were like, we have to go through the formalities. Went through a couple weeks of the formalities, you know, background check, you know, officially apply or whatever. And we never even talked numbers. The CEO I was working with said, you know, you've got through the background, everything's good, that we're sending you an official offer. I think that it's good, but I'll let, you know, the HR person send it to you. It was an amazing offer and it was literally the best interview I've ever had in my life. I'm like, why can't all interviews be like this? Very unrealistic, right? Because I don't think that really happens for people very often, but literally the best interview ever. But that person had worked with me, right, for like, you know, almost a full year, I think, before they had exited the Skim, and knew I was hardworking, knew I was dedicated, knew I was passionate, knew I was a good communicator, easy and approachable to work with at all levels of the organization. And I would be someone that would be an asset to them. So that stuff matters. And you will find situations where if you deliver that, you know, people will come back to you. And I've literally had a couple of situations where people are like, yeah, you know, let me see where I can find something for you, right? But I've also had some people where I would thought that would be like, yeah, let me find something for you. They just don't have the position at, you know, or something available with my skill set. So, but they are always complimentary towards me and my work ethic. So, but yeah, I think that that was by far the most straightforward, simplest job interview I've ever had.
I love that. I love that. Talk about identification of talent. Helps that they knew you, but yeah, that's awesome. And it looks like it worked out. So that's a good call by them. What about a favorite question? Do you have a favorite question you like to ask in interviews?
Yeah, it's always at the end. I love to ask people what's their favorite song. Not their favorite song, but their happy song. And that happy is song. Basically a song that when you hear it on the radio or you play it, it just puts you into this whole new happy place. Because, you know, interviews can be stressful. And at the end, to ask people their happy song. One, I've been able to, you know, find new songs or genres that I would never have thought of before. Two, it helps, you know, knock down that unconscious bias because you have in your mind sort of what the song or sort of genre someone will say. And when they do something different, it totally brings a different light. But three, I think that when you're in an interview process, you know, everybody is usually so, you know, eager, interested in an opportunity. So it helps in an interview in a nice note, and it's different. It's usually not a question that people will standardly hear. And then I guess the other one, if I'm on the flip side in an interview, one of the questions that I like to ask is, what does success look like for me coming into this role? And what does success look like at 60, 90, and 180 days? So that I'm really clear about what the expectations, and I ask this of everybody that I interview with. So I'm really clear. I can usually get a really good clear picture if you're looking for someone who's very finance focused, someone who's very accounting focused, someone who's going to run reports, someone who's going to be a strategic partner. It's a really great way. And then you go in going into the job knowing, hey, they're going to expect, you know, these things for me in the next 6 months. And this is sort of the bar that I need to set for myself to be able to deliver against.
What's your happy song?
What's my happy song? Ooh, it's totally okay. My all-time happy song is Mary J. Blige's "Just Fine." The Chub Rock version is very important. It's Chub Rock's version because it's a nice remix. And then these days, Halsey's. Halsey's new song, Neat. Is it Neat? Whiskey? It's Neat. I think it's called Neat, or Sweet or something like that. But I love his song. Every time that plays, I just like literally just turns my mood around these days. So yeah. So, but all time is Mary J. Blige is Just Fine. Yeah. I think that sums me up pretty well. Yeah.
I love that. All right. What about when you miss on somebody? Is there something you look back on as a theme, or is there something like maybe even early on in your career when you made mistakes in hiring, something that you would look back on that you'd say, dang it, if I just would have done this?
That's such a hard question. I would say, you know, I hate to say this, but probably entry-level people giving them a test, the skills test. The reason I hate that is because as you sort of climb the corporate ladder, so to speak, they give you tasks and you put a lot of effort into it. And then you're like, I put all that effort into it. But at the entry level, it's probably just giving people tasks. That's more common, you know, nowadays than it was probably when I started my career. But giving a test really does assess sort of, you know, where people's skill sets are and what they're thinking. And then also how each candidate, you can tell if, you know, eight people got the assignment and two didn't, that, you know, no matter how much you like them or where their skills are, that they're not necessarily receiving the information in the right manner.
Got it. All right. What are you working on right now that you're really excited about, Stephanie?
Ooh, what am I working on that I'm really excited about? I'm in budget season right now, and I love budget season because...
Oh my God, that is the nerdiest answer I've ever heard. Yeah, budget season.
Yeah, because, you know, when you come into a new role as a finance person and you have inherited a budget, you're like, what were they thinking? There's never the sort of the same backup detail history that you would expect. I don't care how good it is, but when you create your own budget, one, it allows you to establish a rapport with every department leader or a person in the organization that touches the budget, which is really important. It gives you history, background, details, what they're looking for, what they're thinking on the go forward. But then you own it. So, you know, you're never questioning, why did you budget, you know, this random $20,000 in, you know, Q1 of 2025? You're like, I don't know where that came from. You know, it was nowhere else in the budget or whatever, but it was just this random $25,000. So it's a very geeky, financey answer. But yeah, I love budget season.
I love what you love. That's why you're good at what you do.
Yeah.
You're excited about that. I love it. What's a book you've read recently or any content you've consumed that you'd recommend for our listeners?
Yeah, I'm sort of drinking the water here, but I loved Fortune's CEO Daily. I think it is such a great business recap in on what's going on, you know, internationally, US in particular. It really gives you a good sense of business recap. So Daily Beast.
Is it a podcast or is it?
It's a newsletter. It's a newsletter subscription. Daily Beast is good as well. I'm biased. I used to work at the Skim. I think their Skim Daily is really good. But I love the New York Times newsletter. And these are all newsletters that I can literally, like, am I working out in the morning or, you know, taking a few minutes while I'm waiting for someone, I can scroll through and just sort of get a recap of the world. But I love the CEO Daily. Alan Murray, who was CEO of Fortune when I was there, it was just a great sort of recap of what was going on in the business world. And I really loved it.
Oh, I'm going to check that out. That's very good. All right. What is some advice that you give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now?
Speak up more. I grew up in a military family where, you know, where you children and were supposed to be seen, not heard. And I think it stifled my confidence, you know, just keep your head down and not speak and, you know, you'll be okay. And, you know, it works for me, but I think I would have advanced a little bit more in my career if I had learned that, you know, there are times that you need to speak up and times that you just need to listen. And I think I listened sometimes too much instead of speaking up. So I would say speak up more, let your voice be heard. It's taken me a long time to tout my experience and my ability. I'm very much a, you know, I don't like to boast about myself, but I think at times it did sort of probably stifle my career a little bit by not, you know, promoting the contributions I was making at a company. So don't be afraid to speak up and value yourself. Yeah.
That's great advice. All right. We're going to do a little quick lightning round. Okay?
Okay. Let's go.
In honor of Yankees versus Dodgers.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to have a West Coast, East Coast, because you said you lived in LA. You said you lived in New York.
Yep.
We're going back to Tupac, Biggie, sushi, pizza.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. Here we go. I'm going to name something and you tell me if it's better in LA from your experience or New York. And if you want to answer Oklahoma City, I will allow it. Otherwise, we're going to go to the two coasts. Okay.
Okay. Let's do the coast.
Food. Better food scene.
New York. Nothing like it.
Better sports fans.
Like them Jets. Then those Giants and the Yankees, but then you got the Dodgers and before the Raiders, like the Raiders in Oakland, those fans. Oh, I think it's a tie. I can't pick.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a tie.
Better place to do business.
Oh, I think it depends on the type of business. I think if you're in publishing, definitely New York, it's just the heart of what it is. But I think if you're like Hollywood, fashion, media, television type media, it's LA, California.
Okay. Better city infrastructure, government, just like taking care of the city better.
I'm going to have to say New York. I'm a Subway girl. All I right. like the Subway. I like that whole
concept. Right, right.
LA's trying to get up there.
I got to lay myself up here. Yeah. Weather.
Oh, Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma. I like
lifestyle.
The heat. I like the heat in the summertime, and the springs and the fall are really nice, and then the winters are milder. You know, last time I went to LA, it was cold. I was like, I don't remember being this cold.
You are kidding me right now. Southern California doesn't have the best weather. Okay. Lifestyle.
Oklahoma.
Okay. So by a resounding defeat, New York 7, LA 1, 2 ties, and Oklahoma got 2 votes as well.
Yeah, I'm a New York. Even though I'm from Oklahoma, there's something like special about New York.
Something special about New York. All right, listen, I got to tell you what. I grew up loving the West Coast, saying I'm anti-East Coast. Then I started I live in Florida now. I spent a lot of time in New York. I was in New York a week ago. Last week, I love New York too. It's a great place. Love LA too, but they're very different places.
They're like apples and oranges. It's like when people ask me that, I'm like, it's literally completely like, different. They're totally different. Like you like them for different things and different reasons. And I don't see how people can really compare them. They're really two different. They offer two different things. So yeah.
Two very different things. As we just saw by the breakdown that you just did. So listen, Steph, I appreciate you coming in. If I'm ever in Oklahoma City, I'll definitely hit you up. If you're in South Florida, let me know. Appreciate you being on Higher Learning. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Oz. This was such a treat. I appreciate it.
You got it. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.